Greetings, listeners. I'm Julian Fleischer, and as usual, because of antiquated copyright laws, we can't include full recordings of songs in this podcast. But after liking the Naked American Songbook on Facebook, following us on Twitter and Instagram, you can contact your congressional representative. Let's get naked. Never meet your heroes, goes the old adage. Though maybe it's more of an axiom or a truism? Would you believe an article of faith? Well, who knows? Anyway, it's pretty good advice if you're looking to avoid disappointment, since even the greatest people in the world are all just people in the end. And as the children's book once noted, everybody poops. Joni Mitchell, as close to an actual deity as you'll ever happen to cross paths with, told potential meet and greeters, "I don't like to be talked up to." As if there's any other way to talk to the single greatest singer-songwriter in the history of human achievement. She also went on to say, "And I don't like to be talked down to." Ah, Scorpio. But once in a while, you meet a hero, and it goes pretty well. To wit, a couple of years ago, I took part in a benefit for a theater company, and when I entered the rehearsal room, there sitting at the table was Tanya Pinkins, Tony-winning superstar of musical theater and a person whose work I had deeply adored since I'd seen her in Jelly's Last Jam on Broadway 20 years before. And since that performance, her legend had only grown. "Don't talk up to her. Don't talk down to her," I repeated to myself. Well, what does that leave? Just talk to her. So, I did. And, gentle listener, I'm happy to report that my hero talked to me, too. Turns out she just happened to be just a person, too, and a person who just wanted to connect with another person. And connect we did and continue to do, and today Tanya is my guest on the Naked American Songbook. To celebrate, I'd like to dedicate to her one of my favorite tunes about Broadway, where I first saw her perform, performed by another one of my heroes, the timeless Tony Bennett. Here's his surprisingly roof-raising rendition of Warren and Dubin's Lullaby of Broadway, with horns that sound like the taxi you were lucky to flag down late one night in Times Square. Good night, baby, indeed. I'm Julian Fleischer, and this is the Naked American Songbook.
Come on along and listen to the lullaby of Broadway, the hip hooray and ballyhoo, the lullaby of Broadway. The rumble of a subway train, the rattle of a taxi, the daffodils who entertain at Angelo's and Maxie's. When a Broadway baby says goodnight, it's early in the morning. Manhattan babies don't sleep tight until the dawn. Good night, baby. Good night. The milkman's on his way. Sleep tight, baby. Sleep tight. Let's call it a day. Hey, come on along, listen to the lullaby. Cabana Birdland to the lullaby of Broadway. The band begins to go to town and everything gets hazy. You rock by your baby round to Ellington or Basie. When a Broadway baby says goodnight, it's early in the morning. Manhattan babies don't sleep tight until the dawn. Good night, baby. The milkman's on his way. Sleep tight, baby. Sleep tight, let's call it a day. But listen to the lullaby of old Broadway.
Oh, yeah. That's Tony Bennett singing Lullaby of Broadway, Warren and Dubin's classic from the 30s. And I am sitting here today with Broadway's own Tanya Pinkins. Mm. Hi, Tanya. Thank you for coming.
Hey, Julian. good to be here.
It's good to have you. It's really good to have you. It's good to hear.
You haven't had me yet, Julian.
I'm sure I've come about as close as anyone in my position.
My pleasure.
So, you're a great singer. This we know.
Well, thank you.
The facts speak for themselves. You won a Tony Award in 1992 for the musical Jelly's Last Jam. I mean, obviously, I saw the show twice on Broadway and remember you vividly. I met you and we did a little work together, after which you invited me to sing with you at Joe's Pub in one of your concerts. And I said, I would love to. It would be an honor. Can we sing Last Chance Blues? And you said, sure, we can sing Last Chance Blues. What's Last Chance Blues? And I said, Tony Winter, Tanya Pinkins, it's the song that you sang with Gregory Hines in the second act of Jelly's Last Jam when you won the Tony Award. And you were like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. How does that go? And I said, how does it go? It's Last Chance Blues.
And so you played it for me.
No, you said, can you send me a recording of it? I said, yes, it will be a recording of you singing that song. And you said, okay. So I brought it to rehearsal on my iPad, and I have a photograph of you from my camera listening to
learning the song from myself.
Yeah, well, you put the things in your ears and you're kind of looking around the room while you were listening, and then you went, who's that? And I was like,
I don't do that anymore.
Tony Winter, Tanya Pinkins, that's you. She's like, oh, yeah, I don't sing like that anymore. Which is not true, actually. Your voice is evergreen.
Well, you're kind.
And I've done this song many times. We've sung it together several times now. It's one of the highlights of my life in New York, mm-hmm. is duetting on this tune with you. All I do is imitate as best I can the great, late Gregory Hines.
Oh, no, he adds a whole lot of extra riffs and curls and runs.
Who does?
You do.
No, I do not.
Yes, you do.
I certainly do not.
Yes, you do.
No, I'm a very unadorned singer.
George said you added some extra riffs.
He also called me a passable Creole, if I remember correctly.
I couldn't find a black man to sing with me. They were all booked. So I was like, what about this Julian Fleischer? He's kind of olive-skinned.
And we sang it in front of, well,
all of the Dramatists Guild, right?
Sondheim was there.
Yeah.
George was there. Anyway, we're not here to. Ladies and gentlemen, I would like you to sit back and enjoy what I think is one of the great recordings of a song. It's not an actual Jelly Roll Morton song.
No.
But it's from the musical about his music.
Yes.
And it's sort of a take on what a blues might have been by him.
And Luther Henderson took a jazz recording of his, and Susan Birkenhead set lyrics to a piano recording.
Well, these are the results.
What if I whispered low, sweet man, I need you so. Just once kept my finger off the fuse, but I had to fight, prove I was right. And that's the thing about the Last Chance Blues.
What if I never lied? What if just once I tried to say how I really feel, instead of pushing her away? If I'd known what I had to lose, I wouldn't be singing these Last Chance Blues. If I saw her,
if I saw him
standing
there, mean as hell, I wouldn't care.
Looking harder than hell,
I would tell him, hey,
I wouldn't care.
You gotta listen to me.
I
don't make me sing the last chance blues. Now that I know what I could lose, I don't want to sing the last chance blues.
Tanya Pinkins, ladies and gentlemen.
And Gregory Hines.
And the great, late Gregory Hines in what is a near-perfect recording. What does it feel like to hear that again?
Damn, that was good once upon a time.
Right? You sang the snot out of that tune.
That was good.
It really was. It's beautifully recorded, beautifully played. I hear some Nancy Wilson. I hear some Sarah Vaughan. But really, you're your own vocalist. There's a thing that's you.
Yeah, I didn't know I ever sounded that way.
Really? You don't go home and spin this disc?
No.
Of a summer's evening?
No.
Uncork a bottle of wine and play the old hits?
I have not listened to any of the old albums that I've been on in so long. I might have to do that.
Might be nice.
Yeah.
I mean, they're good. That is some good stuff. Good. So when you were singing on Broadway, are the likes of Nina Simone and Sarah Vaughan, some of the artists you named tonight, are they in your head when you're singing?
Definitely Sarah Vaughan, always.
Can you tell me a little bit about your first encounters with her?
Well, I grew up in Chicago on the South Side. I was born in 1962, so it was big Motown era, and I had aunts who were probably about 13 when I was born. So they were really into Motown and doing Motown songs for their talent shows. And that music didn't really interest me. And when I was six, we moved to the South Side of Chicago. And it was the beginning of white flight. It was a very Jewish community. And I remember we moved in, and every night when I would wake up in the morning, there'd be another family missing. But it was our first home, and my mother still lives in that home on the South Side. And I don't know if the people accidentally left this box or purposely left this box. My aunt remembers it as they purposely gave it to me, but I don't remember. But they left a box, and in it was Sarah Vaughan's Live in Japan album.
Back up all your kids and woes, here I go, singing low. Bye.
Flower drum song. A little night music. A Streisand album.
I've got a minute, just a little minute. I have only got a minute, just a minute. I have only got a minute. That is all the time I have.
This is a perfect box.
It was. And so that was my introduction. And I spent a lot of time in the basement listening to those 33s. That's vinyl.
Do you remember, can you describe the first time Sarah Vaughan's voice came out of that machine?
I just know I loved the way she scatted. There's that one from her Bye Bye Blackbird on that Live Japan album. I loved her sound. I got to even see her a couple times in my life live. Just favorite song.
This lovely day will end and end to evening. We'll say goodbye to all we've ever had.
I don't know. I love that sound.
Ooh, that was pretty. It's hard not to ask you to just sing the whole show here today. Well, as you know, I'm also a Sarah Vaughan fanatic. It took me a while to come to her. I had to grow up, you know, before I could really begin to let her in. And I'm still learning how. I mean, she's such a profoundly masterful artist that, I'll spend my life learning.
And her voice changed so much over the decades. Like Ella, you got me into Ella, and Ella was clean from beginning to end.
Yeah.
But, you know, Sarah's voice started really clean, but as she smoked and got older.
Mm-hmm. And did a lot of drugs.
That was in that voice.
But she maintained that range.
I mean, yeah.
Incredible. She was a searcher, always searching till the end.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to play one of my favorite Sarah Vaughns for you. This is Sarah Vaughn singing Everything But You from the Duke Ellington songbook. I like it not only because she sings the heck out of it, but because she's funny.
You left me a horse from Texas, a house with installments due, a letter with lots of X's, everything but you. Left me some beans from Boston, a bicycle built for two, a memory to get lost in, everything but you. Each day was so gay and so daring. I loved every breathtaking minute, for how could I know I was sharing a kiss without a future in it? You left me a dream to room with, a coffee pot from Peru, a knife and a fork to spoon with.
Sarah Vaughn, Joe Pass on guitar, taking a break from his time with Ella to record Duke Ellington's Everything But You from the Ellington songbook. I don't even know what to say.
The last note she hits before she does that scat is the same last note of Bye Bye Blackbird on that Live in Japan album. Whoa, whoa.
Well, everybody has their bag of tricks. Even Rubinstein had the bag of tricks, you know. The masters have to have some tricks up their sleeves.
And, yeah, you got to just steal them.
Thank you. My whole career is made of theft. That was our Sarah Vaughn moment. And so she was like your first exposure to jazz singing?
Yeah.
In the same box of records with Barbara Streisand.
Yes, and I don't know who had the Nancy Wilson and the Dionne Warwick, if that was in the box or if that was something my mother had. But I know that I listened to, there was a Nancy Wilson album, also a Dionne Warwick album. All in Love is Fair, I remember hearing Nancy doing that.
I've been getting into Nancy Wilson lately.
Oh, I love Nancy.
I kept thinking, like, I would hear her sing, and I'm like, who is this? I like this. Who is this? First, I was like, is that Dinah Washington? No, not quite. Is it Sarah? No. Oh, my goodness. It's Nancy Wilson.
A writer takes his pen to write the words again. All in love is fair.
Nancy doing that. And guess who I saw today, of course, which was another favorite of mine. Have you heard Guess Who I Saw Today?
I have.
I love that track.
Well, it sounds to me like we should maybe try to play it since we're in it, right? I mean, we'll stay loose here. What do you say?
One of my favorite tracks that I listened to when I was about 6 or 7 years old, and I would imagine this was my life, was Nancy Wilson singing Guess Who I Saw Today.
Guess who I saw today, my dear? I went in town to shop around for something new and thought I'd stop and have a bite when I was through. I looked around for some place near and it occurred to me where I had parked the car. There was a most attractive French cafe and bar. It really wasn't very far. The waiter showed me to a dark, secluded corner, and as my eyes became accustomed to the gloom, I saw two people at the bar who were so in love that even I could spot it clear across the room. Guess who I saw today, my dear? I've never been so shocked before. I headed blind . They didn't see me passing through. Guess who I saw today? Guess who I saw today? Guess who I saw today? I saw you.
Drops mic, walks off stage. Perfection. My guest today is Tony Award winner Tonya Pinkins, one of Broadway's true legendary actresses who just let us listen to Nancy Wilson's Guess Who I Saw Today.
And the song, it really, the only hook is that one line, Guess Who I Saw Today.
Yeah.
You know, it's a straight story, straight in and out.
Mm-hmm. But it's perfection.
Mm-hmm.
This is the first time I've listened closely to it, because I'm sitting here with you, and it's perfection, and she executes it like a surgeon.
Mm-hmm.
Not an extra breath, not an extra note. She only holds one note or two the whole time. She sings it, but in perfect, well, don't let me talk about it. You talk about it.
No, I mean, she's just, you know, I see her with her martini, serving him a martini and very casual. Mm-hmm. And she's about to, like, slice and dice him with the sushi knives. I've never been so shocked before. You know, you don't know what's coming.
Uh-huh. And then it's over.
Right, and then it's done.
You have to think about what happens next. That's up to you to picture for yourself. We're going to take a quick break and let you imagine just what, besides gin and vermouth, Nancy Wilson is putting into that martini. Coming up, we will hear lots more about Tonya's Tony-winning and Tony-nominated performances.
As she told me earlier in this conversation, Tony winner Tanya Pinkin started singing as a kid along to some records someone had left in a box in her basement. I asked her when she decided to sing on stage.
I don't know that I decided to sing. I was singing in the basement to these songs. And, of course, my, 13-year-older-than-me aunts would always tell me I couldn't sing. So I didn't really think of myself as a singer.
Wait, they told you you couldn't sing?
Yeah. And so I didn't...
All evidence to the contrary?
I just didn't think of myself as a singer, and I sung like the records that I listened to. And I remember when I was in seventh grade and I did The Miracle Worker and the character of Annie, and she's supposed to sing the Mockingbird song, and I would not sing it. I hummed it.
Wow. So what happened? When did you open your mouth?
I think that I had a teacher, the same teacher who put me in The Miracle Worker. The next year, he cast me in two roles maybe it was the end of that same year, seventh grade. He cast me in two roles in Fiddler on the Roof. I got to play Golda and Huddle.
In the same production?
Yes. We were double cast, and so I got to be Huddle on some nights and Golda on others.
Oh, good, because I was picturing you, like, switching wigs real fast in the show.
No, yeah.
Oh, God, Golda's one of the great parts.
Yes. I love that
show.
Do
you love me?
Do I what? We don't hear those kinds of sounds in the new Fiddler.
I haven't seen it.
It's all pretty singing.
Yeah,
beautiful singing.
I'm sure it's beautiful. I'm just religiously devoted to the original, so it's hard for me. And
me
I'm
too.
Sure it's great. And Jessica Hecht is one of the great actors I've ever seen. Talk about a bag of tricks.
Yes.
Good. So I want to ask you a little bit about another artist that was in that box as a young girl.
Yeah.
You said there was a Streisand album in there.
The song that was in there that I learned, and it became my song that I sang for every audition I had, probably for, I don't know, first 5 years I was in New York. It's the song I sang when I auditioned for Halprin's and Stephen Sondheim for Merrily We Roll Along. What do you think that song is?
Oh, my God. Well, that was a long time ago. So it
Don't Rain on My Parade.
You just went for it.
I did. I don't like guessing.
No. And apparently it worked.
It worked. Got me a lot of jobs singing that song.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever heard you sing it.
I sang it at Carnegie Hall. Daryl Waters did an orchestration. It was a combination of that song with Papa Can You Hear Me, Piece of Sky, and Sondheim's other song, Putting It Together, that I did for a GLAAD event.
Oh.
It's about a 12-minute arrangement.
I bet they were glad to get you to do that.
Get to sing in Carnegie Hall. It was unbelievable.
Well, you told me before you came on the show today that Sondheim is a big favorite of yours.
He is.
And obviously, Streisand can interpret him.
Oh, yes.
And one of the first times I ever liked to listen to Sondheim was on her Broadway album, which opens with Putting It Together.
Yeah.
Do you know that recording?
I do.
I like it because she's Barbra Streisand, and so she really makes it about her.
Okay. Well, as she should.
And she's got Sidney Pollack and David Geffen are at the beginning of this track talking about Streisand, how her career is
really?
Over.
Yeah. I want to hear it.
It's crazy.
Let's hear it.
She sings this.
Where does she get this recording of them talking about her career being over?
In the booth next to her. She wrote the script. It's all about how she's like resurrecting her career, going back to Broadway to her roots. You know, she had had
was
a rough...
Was this when she came back and did that concert in Vegas with the $1,000 tickets?
That I was at.
I was there.
No.
I was.
Yes.
Okay.
So this is the opening of the Broadway album, Putting It Together, from originally Sunday in the Park with George. Sounds a little different in the hands of Babs.
Oh, yeah.
Look, I've spent a lot of time working on this.
Look,
I
no one's
going to
buy it. No one.
Well, how can
Nobody
you...
in middle America, anyway, that's for sure.
He's right.
Well, why?
Sweetheart, it's just not commercial.
What is commercial?
It's not what's selling nowadays.
I mean, personally, I
Be
love it. But
nice girl.
Nobody's into this kind of material.
You have to pay a price, girl.
This album needs a hit single we can push.
They like to give advice, girl.
The whole idea's too risky.
Don't think about it twice, girl.
The audience won't understand this kind of
it's
thing.
It's time to get to work. I disagree. Why don't you wait till you hear it?
This is like your old stuff.
Art isn't easy.
We gotta appeal to the kids.
Even when you're hot.
Why would you wanna make an album like this anyway?
Advancing art is easy.
I think we gotta talk seriously about
financing
this.
Financing it is not.
Why take chances?
A vision's just a vision if it's only in your head.
Nobody respects your artistic integrity more than I do.
If no one gets to hear it, it's as good as dead.
You have to think about your career.
It has to come to life. Bit by bit, putting it together. Piece by piece, only way to make a work of art. Every moment makes a contribution. Every little detail plays a part. Having just the vision's no solution. Everything depends on execution. Putting it together, that's what counts. Ounce by ounce, putting it together. Small amounts, adding up to make a work of art. First of all, you need a good foundation. Otherwise, it's risky from the start. Takes a little cocktail conversation, but without the proper preparation. Having just the vision's no solution. Everything depends on execution. The art of making art is putting it together, bit by bit.
We really need all these musicians.
Link by link, making the connections, yes we do. Drink by drink, taking every comment as it comes. Learning how to play the politician like you play piano, bass and drums. Otherwise you'll find your composition isn't gonna get much exhibition. Art isn't easy. Every minor detail is a major decision. Have to keep things in scale, have to hold to your vision.
Why don't we talk about this over dinner, darling?
What's a little cocktail conversation if it gets the funds for your foundation? Every time I start to feel defensive, I remember vinyl is expensive.
Would you agree to do an interview?
Maybe one. Building up the image, shot by shot, keeping at a distance doesn't pay. Still, if you remember your objective, not give all your privacy away. A little bit of hype can be effective, as long as you can keep it in perspective. Even when you get some recognition, everything you do, you still audition. Art isn't easy. You're the right combination. Then the trend's at an end. You're suddenly last year's sensation. All they ever want is repetition. All they really like is what they know. Gotta keep a link with your tradition. And gotta learn to trust your intuition while you reestablish your position. So that you can be on exhibition. So that your work can be on exhibition. Be new girl. They tell you till they're blue girl. You're new. Or else you're through there. And even if it's true, girl, you do what you can do. Bit by bit, putting it together. Piece by piece, working out the vision night and day. All it takes is time and perseverance, with a little luck along the way. Putting in a personal appearance, gathering supporters and adherents.
Oh, she's an original.
Was.
Mapping out the songs, but in addition, harmonizing each negotiation, balancing the part that's all musician with the part that's strictly presentation, balancing the money with the mission till you have the perfect orchestration. Even if you do have the suspicion that it's taking all your concentration, the art of making art is putting it together, bit by bit, beat by beat, part by part, sheet by sheet, chart by chart, by track, by bit, by reel, by pop, by sack, by snip, by shot, by shot, by snap, by shot, by shot, by down. And that is the state of the art.
Mmm, what an orchestration.
Incredible.
That is.
Oh. At the end, there's no Sidney Pollack or David Geffen left. She blew them up at the end.
Mm.
And I love how she adds even more of her own voice. Yeah. Like, you just can't even have enough Streisand.
You can't. You can't have enough Streisand.
That's a good track, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't love some of those synth sounds because they're a little dated, but it's propulsive.
Mm-hmm. Who was that orchestrator?
That's from the Broadway album. That's Peter Matz. He was Barbara's longtime arranger, who also worked with Harold Arlen. He worked with Marlene Dietrich and Noel Coward. He was also the music director for the Carol Burnett Show.
Yeah, that orchestration was amazing.
So Streisand.
Yeah.
You love.
I love Barbara Streisand. So pure. That's just the perfect mix.
We've just been listening to Barbara Streisand's recording of Stephen Sondheim's Putting it together. Not just any artist can walk up to Stephen Sondheim and say, hey, could you rewrite the lyrics to one of your greatest songs for me?
Not get a cease and desist notice.
Right. Exactly. And he did it. He also rewrote the lyrics to Send in the Clowns on that album.
Okay, for her.
He reversed the order of the last two choruses so that Don't Bother, They're Here is the last line of the song.
I know when Eartha Kitt changed, I think, one lyric in I'm Still Here, he did send a cease and desist letter.
To Eartha Kitt?
Yeah.
She's the wrong person to send a cease and desist letter to. She spoke to Linda B. Johnson right in the face in the White House.
One day I'll share my letter from Sondheim about a show of his I wanted to do, but this isn't that day.
Oh, really? Are you sure it isn't that day?
This isn't that day. I've got to do the show and then the letter.
Ooh. It's going to be good.
Oh, yes, it is. It is.
Speaking of doing shows, what's next for you? What has been going on?
I've been doing a lot of film. One, The Book of Henry, directed by Colin Trevorrow, who directed Jurassic World and who's doing the next Star Wars. And then another film that Zachary Quinto and Neil Dodson produced called Aardvark, Brian Schoaf, writer-director. Yeah, so that's what I've been doing, a lot of TV and film. Enjoying it.
Work is always good.
It is.
When it's good, it's very, very good.
Very, very good.
Well, good for you. I'm glad to know that things are cooking over there.
Yeah.
Yes, things are cooking for Tanya Pinkins, including a film with fellow Season 2 Naked American Songbook guest Zachary Quinto. And when we return, Tanya will tell us her secret to a lush life and how to win a quick Tony.
Tanya Pinkins, Jelly's Last Jam.
And the Tony Award goes to Tanya Pinkins, Jelly's Last Jam.
If you're just joining us, my guest today is Tony winner Tanya Pinkins. I hate to keep referring to you that way. I know that it must get boring. What other awards have you taken home over the years? Officially, I mean.
A lot. Clarence Derwent Award for something like Artist That They Expect to Succeed. I forget what it's called.
When did you get that?
92.
Oh.
Drama Desk, Outer Critics Circle, Obie, Delco, a couple of Lortels.
All right. I get the point. You won some awards. It's interesting
Garland,
because
L.A.
All right.
Critics.
Okay, we'll put it online.
It is on my CV. Yeah.
We'll put the list online. It's interesting how much came out of Jelly's Last Jam because, you know, your role was not that big, but the time you spent on stage was extremely powerful.
I tell people one song you can get a Tony Award. Why you want to be working hard? Singing 20 songs.
I don't know.
Just do one really well.
And you win. So let's talk about the song Lush Life while we're on the subject of special songs.
It's just a stunning lyric, and when you think that it was written by a 16-year-old, you're just like, wow.
I know. It's like Mozart. It's
It's
prodigious, crazy, weird.
Brilliance.
Alien talent.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So this is Billy Strayhorn, who was 16, black and gay, in a very difficult setting.
Oh, yeah.
A rough life.
And he wrote Lush Life.
And then out of the 16-year-old kid comes this song, which is easily one of the great songs.
Ever.
And then he went on, of course, to become Ellington's partner, essentially, in a relationship that's still
questionable.
A mystery to a lot of people. I have a couple of good Strayhorn books about his life, and they're all strangely sort of foggy around their relationship. But there's no question, I think, that Ellington owes a massive debt of gratitude to Strayhorn. A lot of the tunes that are people refer to as Ellington songs are actually Strayhorn songs.
Yes.
His musical sophistication was freakish.
Yes.
And then to layer on top of it these lyrics.
Yes. Are we going to hear it? Are we going to hear Hartman sing it?
You love Johnny Hartman.
I do. Hartman's voice is just like velvet. Clean, clear. The way the two of them are riffing back and forth between each other is stunning. And the lyric is like nobody's getting in the way of anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the lyric, the music, the singer, they're all standing alone and complimenting themselves in a way that is rare in music, period. But especially today, things get so cluttered.
I used to visit all the very gay places, those come-what-may places, where one relaxes on the axis of the wheel of life. to get the feel of life from jazz and cocktails. The girls I knew had sad and sullen gray faces with distant K-traces that used to be there. You could see where they'd been washed away by too many through the day 12 o'clock tales. Then you came along with your siren song to tempt me to madness. I thought for a while that your poignant smile was tinged with the sadness of a great love for me. Again, I was wrong. Life is lonely again, and only last year everything seemed so sure. Now life is awful again, a trough full of hearts could only be a bore. A week in Paris will ease the bite of it. All I care is to smile. In spite of it, I'll forget you, I will, while yet you are still burning inside my brain. Romance is much stifling those who strive. I'll live a lush life in some small dive, and there I'll be while I rot with the rest of those whose lives are lonely.
Going to say, this recording is the height of sophistication. It's as tasty as they come. It's Lush Life performed by Coltrane, his quartet, and sung by Johnny Hartman. It's gorgeous, but to me it almost becomes like background music.
Oh, see, for me listening to it this time around, I was really fascinated by the internal rhyme scheme, and I was thinking if Strayhorn were alive today, he'd be rapping, because this is what Lin-Manuel is doing with Hamilton. Mm-hmm. This level of rhyming. My 16-year-old wants to rap, and I'm hearing that rap rhyme scheme, and Lin-Manuel is setting it to beautiful music.
Yeah, you're right. There's interior rhymes, and there's interior harmonic things that are similarly echoey of each other. Mm-hmm. It's an unbelievable song.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 16-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
Tanya Pinkins, thank you for joining me here today on the Naked American Songbook.
Thank you for having me and censoring my music.
That's what we're here to do. This is the room where it happens. This is where the censorship begins. Listen, nobody wants to censor your music. I'm just not allowed to play certain things on the air. It's not me.
Okay, so this is not like television where anything goes.
No, but here's the thing. We have Twitter, and we have Facebook, and we have Instagram, and these are all places where these discussions can go on. And speaking of the room where it happens, one of your favorite new songwriters is, I guess, everybody's
Lin-Manuel
favorite.
Lin-Manuel Miranda.
He's everybody's favorite. The man can do no wrong. And my favorite song from his new musical, Hamilton, which is a juggernaut.
My favorite song is Wait For It.
Okay, well, we're not talking about your favorite song now.
But I thought this was my interview.
Mm-mm.
Oh, okay.
Not at the end. Let me ask you a question. You start off as a young girl in the basement of a home on the south side of Chicago with a box full of records that includes Barbra Streisand, Nancy Wilson,
Sarah Vaughan,
Sarah Vaughan,
and Flower Drum Song. And a little night music. I never quite got into Flower Drum Song. But oh, Peter Pan was in that box,
oh,
too.
Oh, nice. Peter Pan beautiful was in songs there. On that record. Now,
yeah, and South Pacific was in there, too. See, like, it's coming back to me.
Yeah.
Like, life is coming back to me. And that was my introduction to musical theater, was that box that they either forgot or purposely left for me. That box changed my life.
It had to have been on purpose. If not on their purpose, then someone's purpose. Some power left that box for you. And interestingly, as you have made your way through the years as a person who performs and a person who clearly listens to a lot of music, your tastes are very eclectic.
Yes.
You're very open to a lot of different kinds of music.
I like everything. We could have had a little Schumann, but I guess you would have called that a ballad. Yeah.
You're not going to let
Chopin,
me open.
Some Schumann. Oh, you want to close? Close it out.
Are you going to tell me you don't like In the Room Where It Happens?
I like it, but...
I also like it a lot, not only because it's such a good tune and it's so up-tempo. And they're all good songs.
They
I'm
are.
Trying to pick one that I think might actually end up being like a standard that a lot of people will all enjoy for years and years to come, that's hummable, that they will take with them for the next 20, 30 years. Not that the others aren't great. I'm not saying that. I'm picking a song that I think may actually enter
really?
The larger consciousness.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a lot of people's favorite because it's a really great showbiz tune. That's to his credit, too.
That he gives you context. And when we get taught history in schools, we get told, and this happened, and this happened, and this happened. Suddenly, these are human beings who have motivations. They're guided by what's happened in their past. And so they become human beings. They're fully fleshed, and we're interested. It's made me interested in history, period.
Oh, I know there are history teachers the nationwide who are thanking this man for this musical.
Yeah.
Because he really does make it exciting.
Yes. Makes history exciting.
It makes it exciting and sexy and fun, which I'm sure it actually was. You know, it's not just a coat of varnish. It's actually, I think, what it must have been like, the thrill of building a country.
Yeah. I mean, that these guys would like, you know, when people got mad at each other, they'd go and have a duel. Or they would just tell each other off in the paper and nobody was suing for defamation. It's like, oh, you said that about me? Well, let's go fight it out.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go fight you to death.
Right. No lawyers needed.
Exactly.
So.
Let's do it.
And the gentleman who sings it, his name is
Leslie Odom Jr.
He
is extraordinary.
Spectacular. He gave me chills when I saw it. I was taken back to when I was a little boy and I saw Ben Vereen and Pippin when I was this big. My mom took me. God knows what she was thinking to show me that show when I was that young. But I'll never forget Ben Vereen just exploding off the stage. And similarly, this gentleman is everything.
He blows me away all 6 times I've seen it.
How'd you get 6 tickets?
You know.
So I would like to take us out with this tune from Hamilton.
6 times I've seen it. I've got tickets to see it 2 more.
Can I come with you?
No.
Thanks.
Ah, Mr. Secretary.
Mr. Burr.
Sir. Did you hear the news about good old General Mercer?
No.
You know Claremont Street?
Yeah.
They renamed it after him. The Mercer legacy is secure.
Sure.
And all he had to do was die.
Yeah, that's a lot less work.
We ought to give it a try. Now, how you gonna get your debt plan through?
I guess I'm gonna finally have to listen to you.
Really?
Talk less. Smile more. Do whatever it takes to get my plan on the Congress floor.
Now, Madison and Jefferson are merciless.
Well, hate the sin, love the sinner.
Hamilton.
I'm sorry, Burr, I gotta go.
But
decisions are happening over dinner.
2 Virginians and an immigrant walk into a room.
Diametrically opposed foes.
They emerge with a compromise, having opened doors that were
previously closed. Bros.
The immigrant emerges with unprecedented financial power, a system he can shape however he wants. The Virginians emerge with the nation's capital. And here's the pièce de résistance. No one else was in the room where it happened, the room where it happened, the room where it happened. No one else was in the room where it happened, the room where it happened, the room where it happened. No one really knows how the game is played, the art of the trade, how the sausage gets made. We just assume that it happens, but no one else is in the room where it happens.
Thomas Claims.
Alexander was on Washington's doorstep one day in distress and disarray.
Thomas Claims.
Alexander said,
I've nowhere else to turn.
And basically begged me to join the fray.
Thomas Claims.
I approached Madison and said, I know you hate him, but let's hear what he has to say.
Thomas Claims.
Well, I arranged the meeting. I arranged the menu, the venue, the seating.
But no one else was in the room where it happened. The room where it happened. The room where it happened.
sacrificed in every game of chess. We just assume that it happens, but no one else is in the room where it happens. Meanwhile, Madison is grappling with the fact that not every issue can be settled by committee.
Meanwhile,
Congress is fighting over where to put the Capitol. It isn't pretty. Then Jefferson approaches with a dinner and invite, and Madison responds with Virginian insight.
Maybe we can solve one problem with another and win a victory for the Southerners. In other words,
ho, ho.
A quid pro quo.
I suppose.
Wouldn't you like to work a little closer to home?
Actually, I would.
Well, I propose the Potomac.
And you'll provide him his votes.
Well, we'll see how it goes.
Let's go.
No.
What else was in the room where it happened? The room where it happened? The room where it happened?
Tanya Pinkins finally did let me in the room where it happens with the help of Leslie Odom Jr. as Aaron Burr, singing, yes, about the Compromise of 1790 in the ubiquitous Lin-Manuel Miranda musical juggernaut, Hamilton. Thanks again to Tanya Pinkins for getting naked with us here. Look around, look around. The Naked American Songbook is a production of the Jonathan Channel, WNYC, and WQXR in New York City. Aaron Dalton is our Lafayette. Ellie Smerling is our Eliza. Mike Shoeb is our Jefferson. And me? Well, I'm the damn fool who wrote the theme music. I'm Julian Fleischer. Please get at us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and all the other social medias. And, of course, call the Naked American Listener Line at 347-229-1343. Thanks for listening, and keep it naked.
See you next time. Julian Fleischer on the Naked Songbook. Naked he American. Is naked here right now. It's the Naked American Songbook with Julian Fleischer, and he is getting naked right now.
That's how we keep the people listening.